Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
Love Jill. She is a wealth of knowledge. So this episode is going to be so incredible. But before we hop in, I do have to say that we have early bird pricing this week only, which ends Friday for the Move to Improve challenge, which I'm so excited about.
And this is probably one of the favorite challenges that we've ever done because it combines strength workouts, mobility. We have core workouts in there. There's muscle activation. So it really does everything that you need to start building that foundational movement back into your body, getting into that mobility, safely doing strength workouts. I think that's one of the feedback that we get the most is that people feel safe doing these strength workouts without feeling the pains that they normally feel.
We've had people repeat this challenge months after it was, only offered it for 6 months. That's the deal with these challenges. You get access for 6 months because we want you to really do it and really learn everything rather than just like, oh, this is something that I have, so I'll just push it down the road. You know, people who do this are really, they become obsessed because of the education that you get within every single video. I'm doing the full thing with you to really guide and educate you.
Jen has been getting very excited about this because she is excited to get back into movement, to get back into doing strength workout, to just feel that strength, feel that mobility in her body again. We start March 6th, but this week only is when we have the early bird pricing. So you need to get in before Friday. The link is down in the show notes, but it's just jen.health/move. So come join us. There's usually a massive community that's doing this challenge together for 30 straight days. There's opportunity to win prizes. We'll have lives with guests that you can log into and ask questions. So get in now while early bird is still live, and we will see you on March 6th.
We are welcoming back to the podcast Jill Miller. She is absolutely incredible. You're going to love this episode. She's a fascia expert and has 30 years of corrective movement expertise that forges links between the worlds of yoga, massage, athletics, and pain management. Her signature self-care programs like Yoga Tune-Up and The Role Model are found at gyms, yoga studios, hospitals, athletic training facilities, and corporations worldwide. Jill is a former anatomy columnist at Yoga Journal and has been featured in New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Shape, Women's Health, O, The Today Show, and is a contributing expert on the Oprah Winfrey Network. She is the author of The Role Model, a step-by-step guide to ease pain, improve mobility, and live better in your body, and a contributing author on self-myofascial release in the textbook Fascia, Function, and Medical Applications. She's a creator of dozens of instructional videos, including Roll Along with Anatomy Trains with Tom Myers, Walking Well with Katie Bowman, and Treat While You Train with Kelly Starrett, DBT. Her next book, Body by Breath, which is all we're going to dive into on this episode, is The Science and Practice of Physical and Emotional Resilience, will be published in February of 2023. So it's coming up so soon. You're really going to want to get your hands on it. She lives in LA with her husband, two kids, and two rescue dogs. You can check out more about her at tuneupfitness.com. Get her book. We're going to have everything linked up below so you can easily get her book, Body by Breath, and you're going to learn why you're going to want it in this episode. Jill, I am so honored to have you back on the podcast. I mean, my goodness, it's been so many episodes in between. I think you were episode 22. So you were like right in the beginning, which is an amazing episode if anyone wants to go back and listen to that. But I'm excited to shift us into where you are now and what you're bringing forward to the world, which is Body by Breath, your new book that releases so soon. So excited. So I'm just honored to have you here again.
I'm so happy to be here. And you know, when we recorded that, I think we recorded that when I was in a little cabin in the woods, working on the first draft or the second draft of the book. I think I remember taking an hour out of writing and talking to you guys, like in a delusional state, talking about fascia. I mean, the information is accurate, but I'd have like this sort of fever dream of talking to you guys when I was in that cabin.
That's awesome.
That's so funny. And I'm pretty sure you could talk accurately about fascia even in your sleep. So I don't even care if you're delusional on that first podcast. I think the content is amazing. But again, I just... we have gotten an advanced PDF copy of your book. So honored to have that and been able to just scan through the chapters and what it's all about. And just the look of the book is incredible. But breath, body by breath, what really inspired you to have this whole book and title and everything be centered around the breath?
Okay, real quick, we talk about hydration a lot. We talk about what we use for hydration, which is drink Element.
Element. It's all the best. Time.
But I want to talk about real quick what our favorite flavors have been and our go-tos on a daily basis.
They have so many good flavors. I would honestly have to say the one I always come back to, and if we have it, I'm always using it, is watermelon.
Yeah.
It's just so tasty. And again, I just love that it gives your water that little bit of flavor and it keeps you coming back and drinking more throughout the day.
It really does, which not only are you then getting your water in, but you're actually hydrating your body even more because you're getting your electrolytes in. Yeah. So you're really helping to fuel every system within our body and our brain as well. But my favorite flavors, I think, you know, there's two right now that I've been going to the most, and that's the raspberry salt and the citrus salt. I would say those two are probably, which I love the chili ones. I love the chocolate salt. Like those are, you know, classics, but I would say on a day-to-day basis, like the citrus salt and the raspberry salt are probably going to be my favorites.
Yeah. And one of the best things is, as a listener of our podcast, you can go down to the link in the show notes and actually get a special gift with every single order. If you go order at drinkelement.com/optimal, you get a free sample pack. So it actually helps give you all the different flavors that you can try out. Mm-hmm. It gives you some of the special, unique chili flavors, which are great. I've used the mango chili to make wings with as like a wing cover, and it made just like a great like mango spicy tasting wing. So there's so many ways to use these. They also just have like a plain no flavor added mix that you can use. And some people like to use that and then just squeeze a little bit of lemon in.
Yeah.
So another great option, but making sure you stay hydrated, which as new parents, sometimes the most basic things like drinking water throughout the day.
Well, as a breastfeeding parent, and that too. That's all I'm doing right now. So literally having hydration by me all the time is essential.
Yeah. So make sure if you want to try this out and keep getting hydrated more and more, not just with the water, also with those daily electrolytes, go down to that link in the show notes. It's drinkelement, like LMNT.com/optimal, and get your free sample pack today.
Oh, man. So when I first started writing The Role Model, which is my first book, I was approached by the publishing company, Victory Belt. And Victory Belt, some of your readers, or rather some of your listeners, might be familiar with them from their juggernaut books by Kelly Starrett, Becoming a Supple Leopard. And right now their hugest, most popular book is this recent Rebuilding Milo by Dr. Aaron Horsig. They're just the leaders in the movement in terms of literary output. They're so great at putting out technique and the voices of healthy movement, novel movement, groundbreaking, you know, all those things. So when they approached me to write a book for them, and that's a whole longer story, but they approached me to write a book for them and they said, we want to publish your book. And I said, well, I don't have a book. And they said, well, write one and we'll publish it. And yeah, which doesn't happen, by the way, folks. It's very unusual. Exactly. It was like somebody put a golden egg in my lap after seeing me present, right? And I wanted to write this book. I wanted to write about my breath approach, but this was 2011. And breath wasn't trending. Like breath wasn't really a huge thing in the greater fitness space. It certainly was in my space because my background is in the yoga space and the healing arts. And so in my opinion, breath was always the most important thing. But I also had this other side hustle. I incorporated rolling using soft, pliable, grippy balls into my work to help people manage their pain, to improve proprioception, their body sense. And I knew that if I didn't put forth my perspective on self-myofascial release with small balls, somebody else surely would, and I would miss that boat. So I was like, you know what? This is a rising trend. let me just get my voice out in the marketplace and share this perspective. And maybe, just maybe, if I'm lucky, someday somebody will want to hear what I have to say about breathing and core function. And as luck would have it, Role Model has a, the Role Model book has a life of its own. It's been translated into 5 languages. And as soon as I turned in that book, Victory Belt said, "What's your next book?"
That's amazing.
And so 8 years ago, I let them know. I said, "I want to write my book about breathing." Yeah. And so really, ever since I turned in the Role Model, I have been working on this concept. And it's really been very, very difficult to get it out of my body to birth a second book. In fact, it's so huge, it's a hardback. And I'll tell you, birthing a hardback is harder than birthing a softback.
Yeah, yeah, that's huge. But why do you think it's so important for people to understand this concept around breath? Like, we breathe all the time. We're always, you know, we're always taking breaths. We're living.
Yes.
So why does it really matter?
The subtitle of the book answers that question right away. And then I'll dig into it a little bit more concretely. But the subtitle of the book, so it's Body by Breath, Science and Practice of Physical and Emotional Resilience. Your breath is your dial. Your breath is your dial back and forth into different states of the autonomic nervous system, meaning you're able to let your breath roam freely in your body and you can just go about your day and be at the beck and call of impulses, of reactions, of whatever your nervous system wants to do for you or with you. Or you can make adjustments. You can toggle that dial so that you have a little bit more control over how you're managing your moment by moment, how you're managing your interactions, how you're managing your body, your structure, your mood. And all of these things can be influenced depending on how you're breathing, the way you're breathing, and your awareness of breathing. And so I wanted to bring to the public, and I guess to the general public and also to the coaching class of the population, methods and approaches that are novel, that are things that you may not really think when you think about breathing, because it's not really just about sitting in a room and breathing in and out and hoping for the best, but it's also migrating your anatomy in many, many different ways so that you can really fulfill your respiratory range of motion from inside out. And so the book outlines 4 major tools to do that. One, of course, is breath, because your breath is always a tool that you can use from inside out. But we also go over rolling. And that takes us back to our first subject together, which was on fascia and self-myofascial release. So we have breath, roll, move. Movement is a really big part of it all, because you have to be a moving body through the world. And then the 4th component is yoga nidra, also known as non-sleep deep rest. So we work through these 4 tools to really make novel adjustments in the autonomic nervous system to serve many different bodies in many different ways. And one of the biggest plagues that we are dealing with as a planet, as human society all over the planet, is the rising pressure of anxiety-related illnesses and the global burden of anxiety-related illnesses. And this book really is a compound pharmacy of things you can do yourself that have no negative side effects. There's no chemical tracings, there's no prescriptions, there's no barrier to entry that people can do immediately to create an impact on their day-to-day, and that we can collectively maybe adjust the global burden of anxiety and the rising tide of depression, depression-related illnesses that are really increasing all-cause mortality because of it.
That's huge. And just these last few things you're mentioning, it's when I really start to get excited when we talk about breath and why breath is so important. And I feel like Jen and I are kind of like on a broken record sometimes when we do our podcasts by ourselves, because it's like, I feel like regardless of what sort of disorder, whether it's physical, whether it's having to do with your ankle or your shoulder or your knee, there's always some point in the episode where we're just like, well, and breathing, of course. You need to be able to, you need to breathe well because of this or that or this reason and why that's connected to your big toe. but it is, and it connects in so many ways to our body, and it's this tool that we have at our disposal that helps us flip our physiology and guide our physiology and optimize really every aspect inside of us. And so you've mentioned a little bit about this autonomic nervous system. I want to dive in a little bit more there. Like, how can people use breath to shift what's going on in the autonomic nervous system? What is the autonomic nervous system? And how does that relate to these anxiety and, you know, depressive disorders that you mentioned are constantly on the rise right now?
Humans, I think, I'm going to make big sweeping statements here, but humans tend to be really good at going from 0 to 60. We're really good at revving the gas and driving our sympathetic nervous system, or letting our sympathetic nervous system be the main driver. And that's really what it does. It amps us up. It allows us to move. It allows us to think. It allows us to interact. But we have this other side of our nervous system known as the parasympathetic. These are both divisions of the autonomic nervous system, by the way, that help us to recover, regenerate, and heal, help us to reflect. And we're not as good at going from 60 to zero. We're not as good at marinating in the slowdown side. And I include myself in that, by the way, because I love climbing uphill. I really don't like walking downhill. I mean, by the way, walking downhill is just as sympathetic as walking uphill, but the analogy is there, right? Yeah. So it's much easier for me to ramp up, to get going, to stay in motion than it is to stop, to pause, to reflect, to feel, and to allow the body to heal. So this is a practice. Luckily, I would say developed into or thrown into very early in life, within the yogic arts, the dance arts, and the meditation arts and massage arts, that taught me from a really early age how to cope and how to deal with my own mental health and my own unmitigated stress. And I found that doing novel practices like the ones that are in the book would really help to calm me down and help me to have perspective. So when we think about, so in the book, even though the book is called Body by Breath, these tools are always migrating together in order to be able to maximize your ability to breathe well. So let me back up a little bit. There are many zones in our body that govern respiration. The respiratory diaphragm, that's the big parachute-like muscle that lives inside your rib cage. That's our main muscle for breathing. But for many people, because of tension, sympathetic tension that lives in their abdomen or that lives in their neck or that lives within their rib cage, their diaphragm doesn't have a very good range of motion. It doesn't descend that well, and it doesn't fly back up that well. So there's stiffness within the system, and that's going to leave you out of optimization. Your podcast is The Optimal Body, so that's going to leave a lot of money on the table regarding the range of motion of our breathing muscles and the muscles that are surrounding the breathing apparatus. So if we're walking around with unchecked tension in our core, unchecked tension in our rib cage, our spine, and our neck, it's very, very difficult to be able to manage your breath well because these tissues have casted themselves around your breathing apparatus. And more often than not, they've cast us into the position of a stress breather. Mm. And that stress begets more stress. So us being starved of the equilibrium that breath endows to our blood chemistry and as well to our nervous system just keeps spiraling us into these higher and higher states of stress and anxiety. Ugh, are you getting like tense just hearing me talk about this?
No, I'm like focusing more on my breath, I feel like.
I know, I'm trying to sit back and breathe slowly while you're talking about all this.
Yeah, so in the book, I go through these zones of respiration, and they are the abdominal zone, the thoracic zone, and the clavicular zone. And we really try to focus on what we can, first of all, is identifying which zone of respiration is your general home. Mm. And then doing exercises that manipulate the tissue so that we can open up your breathing so that you are at better capacity and that you can play your wind instrument with ease. You're not straining to breathe. One of the things I see a lot in the breath community is people just focus on breathing, but they're not manipulating the many, many, many tissues that are involved, co-involved with breathing. And sometimes we actually have to do a lot of neck work to be able to get our breath below the belt, quite frankly.
And where can you say, like, diaphragmatic breathing in all of this? And when you're talking about this too, I think of, you know, my current state, which is definitely restricted. You know how you talk about the diaphragm descending and ascending, and it's like, well, I'm in a place with being 9 months pregnant where that's 100% like restricted right now. You know, I just don't have that capacity. And I can only imagine, especially after having kids, having to retrain this within the body and losing a little bit of that connection along the way. And we all hear about diaphragmatic breathing, but what does that really mean? Like, what is the scientific approach to how we really address that respiratory diaphragm?
Yes, so interesting. So what's interesting about pregnancy and so exciting to watch your body go through these changes is a normal diaphragm has about a 3 to 5 centimeter descent when it contracts. So if your listeners aren't familiar, that parachute-shaped muscle is actually 2 different halves. There's a right half and a left half, and they're sewn together at this central tendon inside your rib cage. And by the way, your heart sits right on top of that central tendon. So your cardiopulmonary center, your heart and your breathing are literally sewn together. It's so fascinating. And when you breathe in, that your diaphragm, if you're not pregnant, descends down between 3 and 5 centimeters, and then it flies back up. By the way, as you progress through pregnancy, because I'm sure there's some pregnant listeners out there, your diet, you're restricted because of the mass, obviously, of the growing fetus, the extra fluid in your body, and how our organs tend to float up. And so your diaphragm now has about a 1 to 2 centimeter loss on that descent. But you make up for it, Jen. You make up for your total capacity because the ribs end up broadening. Mm-hmm. Right. With that mass growing, the ribs broaden. And so you're not actually losing any vital capacity. It's a really cool trade-off that your body does. And then anyway, there is a whole other postpartum body by breath episode. We can talk about that later. But your ribs also and your core will shift into another place. And there's good training that's necessary to really help those tissues to readapt.
Yeah.
To the new non-pregnant shape. Okay, so we talked about the diaphragm descends on inhale and then it floats back up on exhale. But if I have something in the way of that descent, then I'm going to work around it. What might be in the way? Well, we just talked about pregnancy. What might be in the way is my tight transverse abdominis and my oblique. So I might be that person that wants to look thin, so I'm pulling my abdomen in all the time. And what I don't realize is that while you're doing that, your soft tissues, your fascial tissues start to get the cue that, oh, they don't need to be very elastic, that your body is preferring to live in this rigid state, and you'll literally rigidify. And that can limit the descent of the diaphragm. Mm. And if the diaphragm can't descend, you got to get air somehow. And so it'll default to rib movement as your dominant form of breathing, or even worse, shoulder movement as your dominant form of breathing. And so you'll see people hiking their shoulders up in order to try to get air into their body. And often along with that, there'll be changes in the neck and even changes on how they bring air in and out. They might become more of a mouth breather and less of a nose breather. So Have I gone way off the rails? What was the question? I totally
just
got
about
lost there.
Like proper diaphragmatic breathing. What does that really look like in the body?
There we go. Okay. So yes, I'm still on track. Thank you for that. Okay. So as you breathe in and the diaphragm contracts, it descends, that creates a vacuum. Air gets sucked in from the environment into your lungs. And as your diaphragm is descending and as air is rushing into the vacuum of your lungs, the stuff below the rib cage should expand circumferentially, like a Michelin man, or like a balloon that's being pressed upon, right? When you press onto the top of a balloon, you see there's stretch along the circumference of the balloon and even at the bottom, right? Your pelvic floor. So we have this appropriate distension, this appropriate stretch, or what, you know, all of a sudden it looks like you got bloaty belly when you breathe in, but that's not an inappropriate response. Those are elastic tissues allowing for shape change for these pneumatic pressures to impact them. And that rhythm is very helpful. It's very helpful for your digestive organs. It's also very helpful for the bones of your low back, the bones of your pelvis, and the soft tissues and organs within your pelvis as well. So your organs really rely on this oscillation of the diaphragm descending and ascending to maneuver pressures and to maneuver fluids, to maneuver bowel, to maneuver lymph through that entire area. Diaphragmatic breathing also is the most calming style of breathing known to our bodies. So you'll see babies sleeping or people sleeping generally, you're going to see this motion in the very, very bottom two ribs and the rest of the guts. You'll see this expansion. Mm. When the body goes into more heightened states of activity, or we need to protect our viscera, we need to protect our guts and our low back, we'll start to use the muscles below the rib cage or the core muscles, low back muscles, pelvic muscles. The diaphragm won't be able to descend as well, but we need that tone to do exertion things like lifting, running, pushing, pulling. And you see this body shape really show up in sport and athletic output. And in sport and athletic output, we're going to rely more on our zone two breathing, which relies also on the diaphragm. So you mentioned, what does diaphragmatic breathing look like? Well, sometimes it's the gut moving, but other times it's the ribs moving in conjunction with the diaphragm. And this is a very, very important realm to home in on, this zone two breathing for athletic output. The non-diaphragmatic breathing, or the least reliant on diaphragmatic breathing zone, is the zone three, the clavicular zone. And this is really our in case of emergency muscle, or in case of emergency breathing. And living there is not tenable, and it will put so much stress into your system, as well as create pain syndromes from the neck all the way to the fingertips.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think that's huge. And there are so many cool, subtle things that you're just mentioning that I hope people are picking up on, where when you talk about the zone one and a little bit of the zone two breathing, but like the zone one breathing specifically, where you're getting this pumping of all of our viscera and our abdominal fluids and the lymph. I mean, right there, you're talking about a lot of the mechanical benefits, the mechanical effects that we can get from breathing outside of all the physiologic stuff where we've talked about the autonomic nervous system and, you know, parasympathetic, sympathetic. Your diaphragmatic breathing can actually really help you pump and optimize lymphatic flow, optimize your digestive, you know, churning of your bowels and stuff like that, the blood flow through your abdomen, and all sorts of things that can really come from that, versus the stage three breathing, where you say it's in this clavicular zone, or the chest breath, like you said, what's supposed to be our emergency breathing is actually where I feel like many people spend a lot of their day, which can be a very big problem.
Yeah. I mean, if you just think even about the holding of your phone, or the clicking of the mouse and the reps we do there, the fascial pathway from fingertips goes through the shoulder right up into the neck, right up into this clavicular zone. So, I mean, I was just working with a client before we got on, and she's got this elbow tendonitis, and she's got, wrist pain. And she's like, I didn't use my phone for a day and it started to go away. And I was like, yeah, I know. So you'd be shocked to find out how many reps we're doing with our phone, and ultimately how that is sort of casting us into this shape of a clavicular breather or a stress breather. So it's really important, I think, to address the soft tissue health from fingertip to face in order to make sure that we mitigate or offset, because we're not going to stop using our phones. I mean, yeah. Hello. Yeah. this is just not going to happen. But we can also learn to retrain and just create better habits around it. But I think to be aware of how that's connected to this strangulation on our own breathing pattern, I think it's important, and it sounds alarmist, but it really isn't, because what I can see when I'm working with people from hand to face is all of a sudden they're able to breathe, like I say, below the belt, but really below the collarbone, so that they can get these blended zone one, zone two, this blended abdominal thoracic breathing. And this is really where we want to pay attention to in terms of performance for so many different things, for public speaking, for singing, for sport, and also just for being able to do the exercises that are going to allow our bodies to heal if we're trying to heal from any condition. Breathing into the high neck and high chest is really never therapeutic for healing anything. It just puts us into a further adrenal fatigue and sympathetic overloaded state. The other thing I wanted to highlight about the diaphragm that you made me think of, Dom, when you were talking, is there's so many features of the diaphragm. I mean, there's an entire, I think like 35 page chapter in Body of Breath just about the diaphragm and all the things it does for you. Like, it is a node. One of the things, like Andrew Huberman, the Huberman Lab podcast, I absolutely love his work. He has this quote in the book, "Never skip diaphragm day." I mean, it's such an important muscle, but nobody thinks about, how do I train my diaphragm? There's so many exercises in my book that help you with that. The diaphragm is also a blood stoker, because the diaphragm is a passageway for your esophagus. It's also a passageway for your vena cava and your aorta. So when your diaphragm is moving up and down, it's not only drawing these fluids through your lymph, but it's also literally stroking your vena cava and helping bring oxygenated blood that's from down below back up to your heart for recirculation. It's just so fascinating how many things it does. It's a multitasker.
Well, and now I love like the connections we're making, and I want to connect it back a little bit into, I mean, your original area of expertise and what people really know you for, which is fascia. And I think just touching again, like what, real quick, what is fascia, so people can like really understand the baseline foundation of it, and then how would breath and the movements and the breath practices that you're going to talk about in the book, how would that affect and change or manipulate fascia?
Your fascia is your living seam system. It is, if you're a vegetarian, plug your ears or be open for just a second. But if you've ever pulled apart meat or even butchered meat, you see all the white stringy stuff that's connecting a cut of meat to another cut of meat, or even inside a cut of meat, you see all that white stuff separate from the fat. That's the fascia. It's this elastic, pliable network that strings together every muscle cell in your body, and it goes from top to bottom, foot to face, cell to skin, and everything in between. It's the suspensory network, but it's a living network. It's full of cells. It's full of fluids. And go and listen to our podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
I can detail it more for you there. There are actually two chapters in Body by Breath on fascia. One is on just fascia basics, and then the other is on fascia and your sensing systems. Because in the last 8 years since I wrote The Role Model, 10 years, because I wrote it and then it took a while to publish it. Wait, let me find my time. No, it's 9 years old. The Role Model was published in 2014. Yes. So in that last 9-10 years, one of the biggest discoveries about fascia is the nerve load that terminates, that ends in the fascia of your body. There are 250 million sensory neurons that end in your fascial tissues. And in comparison, your skin has 200 million sensory neurons and your eyes have like 150 to 180 million. So if you look at the total sum of sensory neurons in your fascial tissues, we in the fascia research space like to say that, you know, fascia is your chief sensory organ in your body. And so it's this gigantic feedback loop of perception for us. And some of the cool things about the connection between fascia, sensing, and respiration is it puts us into this really cool transition space between proprioception, which is your body's positional sense, and interoception, your body's physiological listening sense. So interoception, if you're, have you guys talked about interoception on the podcast
before? No, not a whole lot. Nope.
So interoception is your subtle sensing system. And it's the system that gives you information about movement of blood, the movement of air. It even tells you whether you're hungry or full. It's the system that tells you whether you need to pee or poo. It's the system that provides you with sexual hunger and is even tied to our perception of our own emotions. So I call this physiological listening. The nerve endings, again, they're peppered throughout your fascial tissues, but these fascial tissues are encasing your breathing muscles. Your diaphragm, by the way, is one of the most poorly sensed muscles in your entire body. I think there's only 6 or 7 muscle spindles in the entire muscle, and those happen to be in the tails of the diaphragm called the crura. You don't really need to sense where your diaphragm is ever. And because nature has taken that ability away from you, did you guys know that? Like, you can't, like, I can't just say, okay, where's your diaphragm right now, Dom? Where is it?
Yeah.
In the same way that I can say, where's your bicep?
Right.
And you can just flex it and you can feel it, right?
Right.
You can't just like flex your diaphragm and feel it. If you get the hiccups, sometimes you can pick up on the location of the diaphragm. Because the diaphragm in hiccups, or rather hiccups, are a spasm of the diaphragm. So we have this problem. I can't sense my diaphragm. But what I can do is I can build a sensory awareness of what the diaphragm's connected to. And then that helps me to be a better harborer, a better home for the diaphragm's range of motion. And what's it chiefly connected to? It's chiefly connected to the ribs, the muscles that are connected to the ribs, and to the transversus abdominis. The transverse abdominis and the diaphragm are in the same fascial sleeve. So this takes us into, we need to know some of these fascial pathways that are adjacent to the diaphragm. So that's why I think it's important to know about, to learn about fascia as it relates to breathing. You know, your lungs are sitting right on top of the diaphragm, and your lungs are also one of those areas that you can't really sense them. You can feel the rib cage changing shape. You can feel pain in your lungs, but on a given moment, you just really kind of can't feel them that well. We have other mechanosensing. And other sensory neurons within our lungs that are dictating our rate of breath, our pace of breath, if we should cough, if we've ingested some pollen or dirt or toxic fumes, and we'll have these reflexive ways of breathing and behaving because of what the neurons within the lungs are sensing. And by the way, a lot of these neurons are connected to the vagus nerve. That's another big part of body by breath, is the understanding of this nerve called the vagus, which is part of your parasympathetic nervous system. But anyway, just to try to fold up this case, your lungs can be seen as this gigantic fascial organ. And so we want to try to floss and brush our fascial tissues, especially the ones that are related to respiration, on a regular basis so that we have a better mapping of our breathing and so that we can very easily impact the autonomic nervous system.
No, I love that. And I think that just the understanding of this sensory innervation of our entire fascial network and this understanding of interoception and where those internal feelings are coming from, and that they aren't something to be ignored, but they're something to try and become inquisitive about and to have more curiosity about, you know, why am I feeling this certain way inside? is huge. And, you know, like you mentioned, the just being so innervated, you can just imagine the impact that parasympathetic versus sympathetic drive would have on that fascial tissue. One question that I want to make sure that we get in is related to pain. And you've kind of mentioned some things about, you know, pain disorders around the neck or the upper traps and shoulders and chest, you know, when we have somebody who's doing a lot of that clavicular or the upper chest breathing. What role does breath play in pain of both acute or, you know, chronic or persistent pain types?
Well, you can see breath as being a tool to try to influence autonomic states when you're dealing with the chronic pain. So that's one thing. But interoception, by the way, just to piggyback on your comment there and pain, pain flows through the same channel in the spine as your interoception. So it's really interesting how tightly knit together our pain perception and our subtle sensing systems are. But when pain overwhelms our ability to sense ourselves, we often will go towards behaviors that bring us into pain avoidance in a big way, because it's uncomfortable to obviously tolerate and to deal with pain. And oh God, I just totally got lost in my thing. I'm gonna have to erase that.
No, that's
no, you're totally fine.
What was the question again, Dom?
Just how our breath and breath control can relate to pain, both acute and or chronic.
Oh God, how can I make this simple?
I know. That's hard.
I know. Hours that we could talk about in this topic alone.
Well, it's interesting that pain and interoception flow through the same pathway in the spine. I want to get too nerdy on you, but it's called the lateral thalamic spinal pathway. Yeah. And I learned that when I was writing this book. There's a researcher named Bud Craig, who is the world's, I think, most researched scientist regarding interoception. He has a book called How Do We Feel? And he talks about this pain and interoceptive pathway. But when our body is consumed by pain, it really alters our ability to have a good focus. We're very distracted by the pain, and the pain begets pain. So where does breath come in to help? Well, your pain may be dictating how your body is choosing to breathe. And so the breath in that case becomes something to, you know, work with to try to help adjust autonomic state. Because one of the things that will happen in chronic pain is we'll be riding into a corner in our sympathetics, and we don't really get a chance to have that rest, digest, recover. Even though you may be lethargic and you may be exhausted, there's this part of our brain that is constantly on guard, on vigilance because of that pain. And so one thing that I think is helpful is, regardless of where you are in stages of pain, whether it's acute or chronic, is to try to do your best to influence your autonomic nervous system via breathing, especially slow, deep breathing, trying to extend your exhalation longer than inhale, to find out if there is something that you can do to work with. Because sometimes adjusting your breath can create a little analgesic, a little temporary analgesic. And then there's a chance to do some movement or to do some therapy. Because ultimately, it's not just going to be the breath that is the thing that takes your pain away. You really have to work with the soft tissue. You have to work with contractions. You have to work with position. And you guys, as incredibly expert PTs who deal with pain and pain syndromes all the time, know that, you know, the breath is one component of part of a more holistic approach. So we have to include these other things. We have to include proper training, position, and typically in a pain syndrome, there's something that's very, very weak, and there are bully muscles that are compensating for the weakness. And so we have to figure out how to tamp down the bully And then strengthen the things that he's barking and fighting to prevent you from actually connecting with.
Oh, yeah. And I think being able to get to that point of understanding your imbalances and trying to do all the corrective exercises, and, you know, it has to start with this awareness of breath and where that's really coming from. And you are so good at introducing, you know, exercises, whether it's with the Gorgeous Ball or your tools, you know, that you have available, but just being able to identify, map, and start to bring awareness to how we can start to use our breath to, in order to get into that window of movement, you know, in order to get into that analgesic effect and change the way that we feel in that pain response, so that we can do the movements that we want to do and continue to progress on. I mean, I think that alone is why someone should get this book, is just, I know, I look through, you know, the exercises that you have available. And a lot of the times when it comes to breath, you know, we get tied down into one breath pattern or one breath technique. Are you going to expand upon that in the book, like give an understanding of why there's different types of breath practices and what you can really do with that?
Yeah, for the most part, this book, I mean, there are other books out there that do a lot of ramp up style of breathing.
Yeah.
A lot of amplification breathing. This book really is a parasympathetic compound pharmacy. This is a book that gives you formulas for being able to create environments in your body so that you can build resilience in the relaxation response. You know, most people think about running marathons. They don't think about doing endurance training in their parasympathetic states. Mm. And this book helps you to build a tolerance capacity for being in your recovery and regenerative state. For many people, it's extremely uncomfortable to think about meditation. And I try not to use the word meditation very frequently in this book, because the people that tend to be attracted to my work, I would say, are meditation resistant. Mm. And there is a phenomenon called relaxation-induced anxiety, where stillness provokes stress in the body. And I mean, I've seen this for years in my classroom, where people couldn't settle in Shavasana, right? The final pose in a yoga class, or seated meditation created so much discomfort or fidgets. It just wasn't a tenable thing. Like, meditation was just messy, and then they felt like a failure. But there's this phenomenon called relaxation-induced anxiety that affects between 17 and 53% of the population. Just take that in for a second, guys. 17 to 53% are resistant to meditation. So so that when they relax, their sympathetics actually spike up and start to take over. And I talk about this in the book, especially in the vagus nerve chapter. I talk through a theory called the polyvagal theory. I'm not going to get into that with you guys, because we need another hour to do that. But there are physiological reasons why that happens. And it's not your fault, and you're not wrong, because you feel antsy or frazzled or fidgety when someone tells you to sit still. And so there are ways of adjusting body parts, position, pressure, and breath cadence so that you can learn to literally tread water super slow and get the buoyant support of your environment to help you get into these tranquil states that are therapeutic and regenerative and restorative. Like I said, it's very easy for most people to go from zero to 60. It's hard to go from 60 to zero without crashing.
Yeah.
But what this book helps you do is to ramp down through 59, 42, 21, 17, 13, 2, and bring you into stages of watching your relaxation physiology arise, and it keeps you interested in it. It keeps you focused in it, and you don't feel abandoned by frozen statue like stillness. So the breathing is, you know, one of those components that helps with that. in the book, there are all these like, I like to think of them as breath scripts. You'll see them in the breath chapter. There's the, it looks like a musical, musical bars, and it beautiful illustrations. I'm so thrilled with what my illustrators did. I had drawn out all these breath patterns to make it look like you're reading music, but really you're reading breath waves, and there's little icons, little cartoon icons, not cartoon, but you know, illustrations, graphics that help you grasp what the breath exercise is trying to do. So you could just look at that bar of breath pattern and just suck it into your body and figure it out. Or you can read through the instructions. So there are different ways to approach the work and ways to approach the learning. And of course, sometimes we compound the breath with rolling, or we compound the breath with movement, so that the body really stays interested in this process of relaxation. You're not just closing your eyes, breathing, and hoping for the best. There are many, many things to do, but in the most proactive, intriguing way that keeps you interested in the processes of your body. And that's why also this book is a primer to help people build interoceptive acuity. In fact, in the book, there are self-assessments, so you can learn right away what your interoceptive acuity is, what your breath baseline is, and lots of other assessments that will give you a readout on what your starting point is, and you'll just gradually grow and reflect upon that growth over the course of making your way through the book.
That's so cool, and I love how you've basically created this like musical looking language as to how to express a breath pattern. I'm going to have to check that out as a musician myself and see if I can intuitively read it.
I can't wait for you to look at those little bars, Dom, yeah. Because as a fellow musician, I think it'll really speak to you. But I think a kid can look at these. Like, there's even a breath pattern called the chocolate chip breath. Uh-huh. Or chocolate chip cookie breath, rather. And it's built on pretty dense evidence-based science. It's based on the psi neurons and the psi reflex that Dr. Jack Feldman discovered in his lab. He's one of the preeminent respiratory scientists out there. But I built this breath pattern for my daughter, who is now 8. But during the pandemic, she was having anxiety attacks. I mean, horrible panic attacks, rather. And I wanted to help her with breathing. And so I came up with this way of inducing the psi reflex, which is you take a big inhalation and then you add a little extra dose of inhale on top of that and then allow yourself to exhale. And so what I had her do was sniff an imaginary plate of chocolate chip cookies and then take one extra whiff and then exhale. And so that's called the chocolate chip breath, or chocolate chip cookie breath, rather. But you'll see in the little graph, you'll see a wave and you'll see a chocolate chip cookie floating along this breath pattern. So even she could look at it and know how to breathe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so cool. And again, I just love everything that you've kind of outlined for us in this podcast and how people can really start to use these breath patterns, these exercises, everything that they can find in this book to start to unlock that pharmacology in their brain, the master medicine cabinet, I like to call it, that's up between their ears that you can really start to massage and open up with your breath. Where can people go? Because I know that the actual official launch date for the book is coming up here just in the next week, but people can get the book on pre-order. Where should they go to check that out?
Well, Amazon, of course, is a great place to go. Any independent bookseller online or your local independent bookseller, please ask them for the book, ask them to order it. You can also find all kinds of information through my website, through tuneupfitness.com. Jen and Dom are great resources. They're often sharing, really masterminding how to use the role model tools. I see their posts all over the place. I'm so thrilled that you are a fascia fan.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm on Instagram at The Jill Miller, and we have also a brand page at Tune Up Fitness. We do have a pre-order contest going on. So there's just a few more days left to get into that. Big prizes associated with that. I don't want to give too much away, but if you go to those feeds, you will find details on how to submit your pre-order receipt there and be entered to win into those contests.
Amazing. Amazing. I really hope people get this book. It's just going to be an incredible resource to always be able to come back to, have some, you know, those tools available to continue to explore in your body and feel and learn. Jill, you bring the knowledge, you bring the work and really embody it through what you provide people. So I just thank you so much.
Thank you, Jen and Dom. Thank you guys so much for having me. I can't wait to roll around with you and little baby Dante.
Yay.
Just another fantastic interview with Jill on one of our favorite topics, the breath. If you had any interest in what she was talking about or checking out her book, we have everything linked up down in the show notes. And remember, we have the Move to Improve Challenge coming up that starts March 6. If you're looking to build foundational strength and mobility into your body, we will have a massive community moving through March together, and early bird pricing is live this week only. So just consider going down to that link, checking out the challenge, seeing if it's something you might be interested in, and moving through March with us. And of course, we will see you next time on the Optimal Body Podcast.